Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. On today's show, Dennis and I will talk about Black Friday and the changing paradigm of shopping, high school football, a teen party house, and a really interesting story about where some local homeless may find new homes. And joining us as today's guest is Beta Dayhoff, the president of the Howard County Community Action Council. Beta will share with us the amazing work of the Community Action Council and how you can help fulfill its mission, especially during this time of the year. But first, a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Check out what's happening around Columbia Association on the new CA Today blog or the new weekly video series, This Week at CA. Get information about current projects, upcoming programs, CA facilities, and more. Visit columbiaassociation.org/CA Today or check out our This Week at CA playlist on YouTube for the latest news. This message has been brought to you by Columbia Association.
All right, Dennis, what do you have to get us started on the local news front today?
Well, you know, before, actually, we didn't talk about this earlier, but before I get into that, great party last night.
You
know,
thank you.
Paul's law firm has its annual holiday party, and it's last night, and it's always a big party, and I always feel a little out of my game the next day.
Dennis,
Dennis needed to throw that out just to make sure he had a built-in excuse.
It's kind of a disclaimer right at the top of the show. Not really firing on all cylinders today. So, anyway, speaking of not fire and parties, I mean, it was Thanksgiving last week. Did you have a lot of people for dinner? Was it a big?
I did. I actually had a funny Thanksgiving. This was supposed to be an off year for us and ended up being an on year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We ended up hosting my sister's in-laws. Basically, her or her whole family, which was a house full of people I'd never met before in my life. They're family by marriage, but I'd never met them.
Right.
So
and
it was interesting. It was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
We
had a great time.
Right. How about you? Big group for yours? Or?
Well, for the first time, we went to my brother's house. So he made the turkey, and I made everything else. So in the morning, I sent him a text message, told him what I'm bringing wine, bringing the appetizers, and he wrote back saying, "Don't forget the wine glasses." So he's a complete bachelor's pack. It was fabulous, though. Course, he did a great job on the turkey.
Of course, not having wine glasses never stopped me from drinking the wine.
There you go.
That's a shocker.
Yeah. Anyway, the big story, of course, now has become not just the holiday of everybody eating, but shopping is so much a part of the whole Thanksgiving.
And with Thanksgiving being so early this year, it really extended the entire shopping spree leading up to Christmas
this
by a whole week.
One of those, we had five Thursdays in November, and by decree, I found this out when I looked up. By decree, Thanksgiving always falls on the fourth Thursday of November.
Congressional decree, I assume.
Congressional. There's an act that was, you know, it's a quintessential American holiday. I mean, nobody else celebrates Thanksgiving except for us because we, the pilgrims and all that stuff. But again, shopping is the huge thing. And now, used to be, everybody went shopping Friday morning, the Black Friday, it got the name.
But now,
8 o'clock. I mean, I think Target in Howard County opened at 8 o'clock on
Thursday evening.
Yeah, Thursday evening. I mean, isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. I think there's no sanctity of family anymore at all. You know, even with sports. I mean, Sunday used to be the day you kind of, you know, it was a family day.
Right.
Yeah. Now you got sports all day, every day. You got stuff to do.
County is one of those, I do not like Thursday night football. I didn't mind it when the NFL experimented with it. You had it once in a while. But every week, I'm like, are you kidding me? There was a game last night? I mean, there was a game last night. You had a party going on. That interfered. It threw me all out of kilter. But, I think that it's probably some of the traditional retailers adjusting to changing ways people shop. I mean, if somebody can go on right after dinner and go on their computer and do their shopping at Amazon.
Actually, Amazon rocks. I mean, it just plain rocks. You can find just about everything. If you join their Prime membership, which is, I think, like $79 for the year, you get basically free shipping.
Right.
You can return stuff with such ease. You don't have to ever leave your house. Can you get everything? Can you walk into a mall and look around and make sure that sweater is the right sweater? Maybe not. But you know what? You can get 90% of what you need delivered right to your front door.
You know, don't get into the holiday spirit of coming out to the mall. Looking at the decorations.
That's very true.
I'm with you. I got to be around the people.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on my computer enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I understand. You know, this pushback against the early shopping, I get, because, you know, people think it's an infringement on the holiday. But, you know, from the retailer's perspective, they're saying, I'm competing with Amazon, that they can go shopping anytime. So, you know, why shouldn't they be able to? Anyway.
So Howard County won a grant.
Yeah, speaking of shopping.
Ellicott City Facade Improvement Program has been awarded $50,000 to help Ellicott City. And we've actually talked a lot about Ellicott City recently, Historic District.
Yeah, I've been in the news a lot.
And
that's to dress up the storefronts, and I'm not sure how that works. I guess a property owner can apply. And
it's to help repair and restore buildings. They're going to have new awnings and new facades and things like that. I think give it kind of a fresher look. I don't exactly know how the grant is delegated out to the various store owners. I'm not sure about that. But it's part of the community legacy program of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.
You know, I'll give the merchants in Ellicott City, particularly the Ellicott City Business Association, the ECBA. I want to give them a shout out. They're really trying to kind of take it to the next level down there. Lots of good events. They had that music fest this summer that was awesome. They'll have Midnight Madness, I think, next. I think that's next Friday, isn't it? Or it's coming up. It's not this weekend, but I think it's next weekend, which, if you haven't been, that's a fun thing to do.
And you know what? We've had discussions about Columbia versus Ellicott City or Columbia versus non-Columbia, and Columbia and Town Center Development has just so monopolized the news over the last several years. Kudos to County Executive Allman for really paying attention to Ellicott City, I think at a level that it's been deserving of for some time and really hasn't in recent years gotten.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much to work with there. We're lucky to have it. Big news in Clarksville.
River Hill?
Yeah.
High school. Actually, last night, I actually had some people come to the party and say, gotta go. There's a big football game.
And that was at M&T Bank Stadium, wasn't it?
I think they
do the championship.
And this was the state championship for high school football. And River Hill took its fourth state championship, winning 18-14.
Congratulations, Hawks.
I have to say, go Hawks. That's where my kids go.
Is that right?
Really?
Yes.
Were they watching the game last night?
Of course.
Of course they were.
Were you there as well?
No.
You know, it was great. The Explore Howard had the stats from the game in the paper today. And what I thought was fascinating is time of possession was almost exactly equal between the two teams. I mean, River Hill beat,
well, the score was pretty tight, so you kind of expect that.
Yeah, River Hill beat Huntington 18-14. It was within seconds of each other. I mean, so fans got to see the defense and the offense of both teams equally, so it was good. Good game.
Gave them both a chance to rest up.
And while we're speaking of sports and sports fields, you know, the new crown jewel of the Howard County Parks system, the Blandair Park.
All right.
It's getting a little pushback. People don't like the noise from the announcers out there. And they had a meeting with the county, with County Parks and Recs. And people are saying, you know, that this one guy says, the amplified noise has got to stop. It doesn't need to be turned down. It needs to be turned off. And true. I mean, now with these are big stadiums they have over there. I don't know if you've seen it. But they're
enormous.
Yeah, they're enormous. They've got press booths and the whole works and PA systems. And the parks can stay up until 11 o'clock at night.
You know what else is interesting? My wife and I were lamenting about when we went there last week for an event. Getting to Blandair, you're really going through residential neighborhoods that have been these quiet little private streets for so many years.
And those were cornfields.
And now there's so much traffic.
Yeah.
Major adjustment for the community.
It is. It's a major adjustment. And, you know, these are, you know, our parks are so good. I mean, leagues from all over are coming into Howard County for their games and their tournaments because the facilities are so good.
Exactly.
So it is, you know, I'm sure they'll work it out, but it's kind of funny. There's always somebody that gets upset when you try to do something.
Well, I was just going to say, you know what, we're so fortunate in the county to have the parks that we have, and you know what, they got to go somewhere, and with every benefit, there's going to come some cost for it.
I'd rather have the kids out in the playing fields anyway. I think it's a better thing for them to be doing.
We talked about previously the tiered system that is being imposed upon the county from a zoning perspective.
Yeah, from the state.
And, you know, despite having talked about this before and having read the articles, I have to admit I don't have my arms totally around this issue. But the state is mandating each municipality designate all of its available land in one of four tiers.
Right. Four growth tiers.
Right. And tier one, which I guess is the most developed and with the most public services.
Right.
And then you have tiers two and three in between. And then tier four is really that tier that is designated for agriculture and conservation.
Right. And you're going to they're limiting development at like one house per 100 acres or something like that.
Yeah, and it's really restrictive.
Right.
And what the state has said is that you, county, the municipality, you need to decide how to designate your land in these four tiers.
Yeah, here's a gift from the General Assembly.
Right. They're getting good at that, aren't they?
They are very good at that.
But it's really an issue, I think, for local elected officials. They need to deal now with their constituents. And,
right.
You know, a particular note is somebody like Greg Fox, who's dealing with a substantial portion of the West.
You know, you're dealing with a guy who was hoping to, or at least the value in his farm was its development value. And he probably borrows money against that value.
Right.
And now you're telling him that value doesn't exist anymore.
Well, and I imagine over the last 5 years where development kind of dried up, people were sitting tight thinking, you know what, I'm going to make it through this recession.
Right.
And once I get through it and housing starts pick up again, I'm going to sell my land.
Right.
And they may not have that option anymore.
No, if this goes through, that's taken away from them. And without compensation, really. I mean, I don't think there's any way to...
You know, it's not really a taking in its traditional sense. It's a rezoning. And there's really no expectation that you have, I think, as a property owner, that you're going to have certain rights. I mean, that's part of the gamble, I think, of purchasing land.
It's kind of, you know, and I understand why they do it, but it's kind of, Tom Cole in his blog, he wrote an interesting kind of analysis of this, of the predicament of a county council person. They didn't pass this growth tier law, you know, but they have to deal with the consequences of it. You know, they've got to deal with the angry farmers who say, why are you doing this to me?
The teacher pension shift, which we talked about previously as well, that was another example of the exact same thing, where the state was responsible for teacher pensions, and then they decided, no, we can't afford it because we're too busy spending money on other things, and they forced it down on the county, and now the county needs to absorb that. Well, they can only absorb it in a couple of ways. They either cut programs or they raise taxes.
Or raise taxes, right.
Excuse me, increase revenue.
That is
really the new politically correct way of saying taxes.
We never raise taxes. Right.
Revenue enhancements. I like that. You know, it's funny. I was trying to explain what the word embellishment meant to my daughter the other day, and it's revenue embellishment. It's kind of the same thing.
It is. The other thing that's been on the radar.
The same work session the other day was the
bullying.
Yeah, Courtney Watson, which is an interesting. It's interesting. They're both kind of talked about in the same article in Explore Howard, because in one instance you have the state saying to the county, "Here's what you need to do." And yet, now Courtney tried with this bullying legislation that she's trying to. Actually, she's tabled the legislation for now, but she was trying to push it back the other way. She was trying to ask the state to appropriate their proper resources to coordinate efforts between a lot of different groups to combat bullying. You know, between the courts, social services, you know, the schools, and to have some, but she's pushing that.
Well, I didn't have the benefit of actually reading the bill itself, but the description of it, her legislation was going to encourage the General Assembly to provide necessary resources to appropriate agencies to deal with bullying. Yeah, so what is that? Inviting them to spend more money on bullying that we benefit from? I mean,
it's not
really a legislative issue as much as a lobbying issue.
You know, and what was really interesting, I actually watched it. Again, kudos to Howard County. I can watch the county council meetings and the work sessions online. You don't have to go down to the courthouse. And I'm watching it the other day as I'm doing some work in my office. And Christine McComas, Grace McComas' mom, got up to testify. And, you know, of course, I'm expecting her to say, this is great legislation. We should pass this. And as she went on, she gave a very moving testimony, of course, about the tragedy that happened to her daughter. But in the end, she goes, you know, when I sat down to write this testimony, I was intending to support it. But she says, as I wrote it and went through my thoughts last night, she goes, I realized that all these agencies were asking to work together, they all failed my daughter. You know, it was like, whoa. So she never really came out and said she endorsed it. And anyway, Courtney's tabled the legislation. I think she's probably going to come back in some other form. But it was an interesting piece of political moves, because the school board didn't fully support it either. They were split 4-4 on whether they were backing this one.
I got the sense that it lacked substance. It wasn't concrete. It was conceptual. It was an idea.
Right.
I think we all agree that bullying is a problem.
Who's going to be against stopping bullying? I mean,
right. But let's not pass something for political motives. Let's pass something because it has meat around it and it's got substance.
Yeah.
So I think we're all in favor of that.
As a parent with students in Howard County Public School, I think anything that we can do to increase awareness about the problem related to bullying and having the community buy into the idea that we have to do something about it, it's wonderful. But it really has to stem from the school system and the teachers and the students
and the community.
Well, I was going to say, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but you know what? A lot of this comes from home. And the other thing that we can't overlook is, you know what, this is what kids are going to do. It may not be a problem. It's Darwinism. It's survival of the fittest. Kids are going to compete. They're going to be demeaning. It's been happening for centuries. It's going to continue to happen. It's how we address the issue and how we deal with it that I think we can legislate and try to change from the home.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, it really is. It's got to begin at that where the rubber meets the road at the home. So
right.
Next one's mine, I think. Yeah,
Dennis is speechless.
I am a little bit because this is one of those. This is
it's
one of those cases
night.
Of. Yeah, there might be a lot of that today.
Exactly.
The case of unintended consequences. I love that. Well, so the county has announced plans to develop a special kind of apartment complex for homeless people.
Wonderful.
Right. 33 units. You know, specifically for homeless people. But
single occupancy.
Yeah, single to get there to do this. They've bought a mobile home park in North Laurel that has 38 units, that those people are going to be displaced. So they've got a homeless apartment complex for 33 people that's displacing 38. Somebody needs a calculator in the Department of Housing in Howard County. You're being quiet.
You know what? In the law, there's this expression called res ipsa loquitur, which means it speaks for itself. I don't even know how to respond to that. I mean, what do you say to that? It's unreal.
All I can imagine.
And Vita, I don't know if you have a perspective on how this came about or not, but I mean, it's unbelievable.
As a member of Board to Promote Self-Sufficiency, we've been really involved in county executives' effort to end homelessness in Howard County and to focus on complementary services, supportive services, as well as single occupancy units for many of individuals that are difficult to house. And I think this was an effort to overcome that problem.
So
I don't know about
the
math situation.
Actually, the math situation may actually be worse. These are 33 single occupancy units.
Units, right.
You're talking about 38 mobile homes, right?
Yes.
That probably house
more than
two,
one occupant,
three,
yeah.
four people. So we're actually talking about housing for 33 and displacing probably north of 100.
Right.
So you too need to work on your math.
Before I move on from that, I want to give a shout out to my colleague at the Business Monthly, George Berkheimer, who sent me an email last night going, how does this make sense? So, it doesn't. I mean,
now for those displaced that are feeling like they want to party, there is this guy.
There's some empty apartments around.
I'd like to introduce you to these guys, and they are hanging out over in the apartment complex, Orchard Meadows Apartments.
Orchard Meadows Apartments.
So there's some vacant apartments over there, and these guys figured, you know what, this is a great place to party.
It's cold outside, so we need a place inside.
It's cold. My parents won't let me stay there. I can't do parking lots anymore because the police are regularly checking those out. So this guy breaks into this vacant apartment, and he has a party, stains the carpets and trashes the place. They end up smoking pot. There's alcohol, you know, all the things you'd expect from a teenage party.
And must have been a great party.
So the manager of the apartment complex gets wind of this and calls the police, and the police show up. And they find alcohol that is still located there. So, and we know how teenagers are. There's no way they're going to leave their booze behind.
There's still food in the fridge, right?
So they're figuring score. So, you know, they hide in the back bedroom. 25 minutes later, the guy comes back to get his stuff. I mean, seriously, cardinal rule. If you want to be a criminal, do what you got to do, and then get out.
Don't come back.
Do not return to the scene of the crime.
I mean, seriously?
And for what? I mean, I think he came back to get a bottle of booze or something.
You have to give it to him. That was pretty pretty creative way of having a party.
Very creative.
And he didn't get his parents mad at him. Wasn't at the house.
Well, wait a minute.
Now we might have a problem.
Yes. He shouldn't have gone back.
Referrals from my colleagues in the criminal field are welcome. I'll be happy to refer you out.
So, on that note.
So we should formally introduce Beata, although she's been a very lively participant already, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Beata Dayhoff, the president of the Howard County Community Action Council. What in the world is that?
What does that do? You get action.
We get action, and we get involved in the community. Community Action Council.
And you know what I should say? I was blown away going onto your website, the number of employees and volunteers you have. What an organization. It's huge.
Thank you so much. It's a fabulous organization. We have a huge impact economically and socially in Howard County. And it's been around since 1964.
Wow.
But I understand that it's awareness.
You look great.
Thank you. public awareness is one of our major issues because as a private, small, nonprofit organization, we don't have a marketing and advertising department. So we depend on word of mouth in the community and our friends like you to let the families who need us know that we are here to provide services to low-income families and for the businesses and the general community to support us in delivering the services that we provide. Private nonprofit organization, our focus and mission is to alleviate the effects of poverty through the programs that we offer, increase awareness about the struggles of low-income families, and help low-income families reach self-sufficiency. And we basically accomplish our mission by providing a variety of services to families who are low-income, including housing assistance for families who are facing homelessness and they need eviction prevention.
There's some families down in North Laurel who are going to
need your help.
They're going to be calling.
Yes, they'll direct referral.
Well, actually, we were talking before we started, you actually have helped some of those places with winterization.
We sure have, yes. Many of the mobile homes in Howard County have been weatherized by our organization, absolutely.
So before we get into your all the detailed programs that you actually have, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into this? What a great job.
Thank you so much. Well, my background is in finance and accounting.
So you could have helped that math problem back
then. I could have. Nobody called. And I actually came to CAC to get a couple of years of nonprofit experience under my belt, and that was about 20 years ago. And I just absolutely fell in love with the mission of the organization, the services that we provide.
You came up through the ranks of the local.
I did. I started as the chief financial officer and moved up to become the vice president and then was in acting presidency for about 3 months before I became the president
of the
organization.
Was that 2 years ago that you became president?
Three and a half years ago.
Well, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you so much.
That three and a half years is flying by at the same rate that 20 years did.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
That's true. A very exciting, stimulating place to work. And at the end of each day, you go home knowing that we have really had a huge impact on lives of many families in Howard County. There are 5,000 families who come to us for assistance every year.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Paul.
So I was going to say, so walk us through some of your programs.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks. We run the Howard County Food Bank, and in 2012, we served 20,000 individuals who walk through our food bank, and we partner with 12 pantries, most of them in the faith community.
Now, when you say you partner, do you share resources? Or
no, we ask them to open a pantry at their location, and we provide all the food.
Oh, you do?
And they provide volunteer service so that they can provide services to families who may not necessarily be able to come to our main food bank.
Right.
So one of my main purposes when I took over Community Action Council was to improve the health and quality and access of our food services. And that's why we started increasing the number of pantries that were partnering with us from 5 to 12.
And you also have gardens now.
And now we have a community garden.
That's very cool.
As part of the improving the health of and quality of the food that we were providing to our families. And we have a garden that's right across Long Reach High School. We have 6 plots. And it is
what kind of things are they growing over there?
We're growing everything. Tomatoes, cucumbers, eggplants, kale, okra, And now watermelon.
And now, of course, the fields are fallow because you're
absolutely, you get, absolutely.
But you'll plant again in the spring.
Nice work, Dennis. Nice.
But what do you do? I was going to go somewhere with that. So, but how do you now that you don't have those fresh vegetables? Because do you look then? You look for the stores to give it to you now? Or?
We partner with the stores. We partner with Wegmans, Harris Teeter. I just had a meeting with the Howard County Public School System. We want to see if we can access some of the greenhouses that they have.
Ah, very good.
Especially at their Cedar Lane school, and create a collaboration between students who go to the Cedar Lane school and are in special needs program, and have the garden as an educational component of what they do every day, and then have the low-income families reap the benefits of that service.
Yeah. Tell me this. I've had this discussion with people before, and we've actually talked about it in the context of the party that I have. We end up with so much food left over at an event like this, and there seems to be not a good way to get that food into the hands of people that need it,
right?
Because it's already prepared.
It's already prepared, right.
There's a question as to how long it's been prepared. Is it still good? Are there ways that people can take leftovers from a party like we had last night?
Absolutely. Actually, they're now doing that in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, the Central Kitchen. Is it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the program that's now nationally known. And Community Action Council will not be able to take that food because we don't have the kitchen facilities, but a grassroots, the Day Resource Center, where they actually have a kitchen, they can put everything in the refrigerator, freezer, and provide prepared foods for their residents. Those are the people that you want to contact and make sure that they'd be more than happy, I'm sure,
great,
to come over and pick it up or have you deliver it.
But it's more than, now, of course, you do more than the food bank. You also,
we do more than the food bank. We
people need a little help with rent. Do you help
need
out
a
that?
Little bit of rent. Yes, rent assistance. Come to Community Action Council. I tell a story. Imagine yourself being 16 years old. You're a high school student. You come home and there's this big piece of paper on your door that says eviction notice. You look around. You don't want your kids to see that. You take that off. You go inside. Turn on the light. The lights don't come on because the electricity has been off. You go into the kitchen. You're hungry. You want to get something out of the refrigerator. You haven't eaten since lunchtime. It's 3 o'clock. There's nothing in the refrigerator. That's when CAC comes in. We provide assistance with rent. We provide assistance with electricity. We work with Baltimore Gas and Electric, turn on the electricity. We weatherize the home to make sure it's energy efficient, and we provide food to the family.
You know, people think of Howard County as being so affluent. Yet, what are actually the statistics on people that are in poverty and people that are homeless in this community?
I really appreciate you bringing that up because there is really a lack of awareness about the struggles of low-income families. 5% of our population, 5.7% of our population is low-income, living at poverty level. And to
That's
put that in perspective, poverty level as defined by federal government is making $23,000 gross for a family of four. Imagine that income having to live in Howard County. So there are many, many more people, thousands of people, who are making more than poverty level, but they're still struggling.
This is like 15,000, 16,000 people in Howard County.
Exactly, that are living at poverty. Exactly. And as it relates to our homeless population, if you look at our school system, right now, as of September, they had about 360 homeless students. And by end of the school year, they'll have close to 600, 700 homeless students.
How do they know that?
The students and the families actually make that known to the school system.
Okay.
And they, if they're doubling up, also they're counted as being homeless.
Now, you provide these assistance. You give them like the stopgap help. I mean, but that doesn't make the problem go away.
Well, what I like to tell our staff and what we try to work on, we have this arrow of hope. When a family comes in, our focus is sustenance. You know, what is the immediate crisis that they're in? Is it food? Is it housing? Is it energy? Or do they have children? Because we administer the Head Start program that are eligible for our early childhood program.
Right.
So once they get over that immediate crisis, then we look at a stability. What can we do with the family to make sure that that crisis doesn't occur again? What type of services can we provide them supplementally? And who can we refer them to workforce development or other organizations that can give them the tools that they need in their toolbox to make sure that they become self-sufficient, which is the last tier of our assistance.
Is there a cutoff time for the average person that goes in, or are you just as?
No, we continue to case manage and stay with them. Our families who are in Head Start, they're with us for 2 years, so we have a great opportunity to work with them over a long period of time, and also work with the PPWs, the People Personnel Director workers at the Howard County Public School System, that kind of take our families under their wings and work with them as they move through the school system.
Okay. My big question is, where does the money come from that you give out? Who funds the Community Action Council?
We get our funding from multiple places. Federal government, state government, local government provides us funding. We do major fundraising. As I said, the numbers over the last 3 years in every segment of our service delivery have doubled or quadrupled. And as you know better than most, our grant amounts coming from government agencies
probably have gone the other way.
Exactly. So there has been a dichotomy where there's a huge demand from the community for us to provide service, and there is a challenge in meeting that need because our funding has been
less
reduced.
And less dollars.
Exactly. So we turned to the community and asked the community to help us. That's one of the main reasons we started the garden, because we couldn't afford to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables, so we had to grow our own. And I find the Howard County community to be extremely generous in giving when they know about a challenge and a problem. And so we have really been reaching out, and the community has really risen up and assisted us greatly.
Wow. So what have you done to impress upon the community this greater need? I mean, is it new programming? Is it just a more concerted effort with existing fundraising efforts? Or are they brand new?
Appearing on podcasts.
Exactly.
Spread the word.
I'm calling you guys and saying, help me out. Well, multiple levels. We work with the Chamber of Commerce, Leadership Howard County, and they are our connectors to many businesses in the community. And then I just go in and talk with many of them and let them know what the challenges of our organization is and what the needs of this community are, and many of them do respond. We have food drives that take place at school systems, at neighborhoods and communities.
A lot of them going on this time of year.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's one of the main ways that we keep food on our shelves at our food bank. Because we just simply cannot afford to purchase everything. We have partnerships with Wegmans and Harris Teeter.
Yeah, Wegmans gave you like 8 tons of food right before they opened, didn't they?
Before they came in, they gave us 17,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
And they also sponsored our Thanksgiving distribution that happened right before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I saw that.
We gave away 800 turkeys to families in Howard County. And I just to give you a scale of how that program by itself has changed, when we started the program 8 years ago, we were giving away 100 turkeys.
Wow.
And
huge.
This year, we were basically, once we ran out of the 800, we were turning people away. So there was capacity to assist even more people.
That's harder.
Exactly. And that was one of the major components of our budget, you know, having funding to provide Thanksgiving services to our families. And Wegmans ran a campaign for about 5 weeks, and within 5 weeks, they raised $20,000.
Wow.
That supported the entire cost of our distribution. Wow. So it's a fabulous community partnership, because it was the individuals in Howard County that contributed to the cause, and we're really grateful about that.
So this time of the year, obviously, there's always a greater need. It's colder outside. People don't have places to, don't have shelter. They don't have as much food. They obviously want to spend their money on.
No place to party.
Well,
except at the vacant apartment.
Apparently, they found a place for that, so I think we got that one worked out. But they want to buy presents for their children and things like that. It's tough this time of the year. What can people do this time of the year to help you help the community? I mean, you mentioned food drives, for instance. I mean,
exactly.
What kind of things could our listeners go out and do?
We would love for the families to have food drives and to adopt families during the holiday times. I mean, many of our families have children under the age of 5. So there is a lot of, you know, the same things that we want for our kids, the same happiness that the holidays bring to our families are coming to other families who are financially not able to meet those needs. So we ask the community to help us with holiday presents and volunteer time. It doesn't always have to be a monetary contribution. Even coming into our classrooms and reading to our children brings that spirit of community into what
now
we do.
Now, your classrooms, you have...
At Head Start.
Oh, at Head Start.
We run the Head Start program. We serve 264 children. We have three schools. And we provide transportation. So in each, and our programs are nationally accredited. And our children basically assess school ready at the same level as children coming out of the pre-K. So it's a high quality program that we deliver to low income families. At the same time, there are 500 other children who could be served by Head Start, but we don't have funding for them.
Resources. And you do. Do you have any number of the volunteers that are involved with Community Action? I mean, can you?
We have about 1,000 volunteers at Community Action Council.
I'm thinking of volunteers.
Many thanks to Mickey Gomez.
Yeah, I was going to say we have Mickey Gomez just sitting here watching or listening to our podcast today. And
she is a fabulous partner. I mean, we could not do what we do without Mickey Gomez.
And the volunteers are fabulous. I mean, these people
absolutely. But she's the connector. So we go to her and we say, we need people for our garden. We need people for the food bank. We need people for Thanksgiving distribution.
She charms her socks off and gets them to do it.
She
I don't
does.
Know how she does. It's amazing.
She's one of the reasons we actually partnered with ARCA Power.
It's one of the reasons I block her calls.
Oh, boy, there's Nikki. What does she want now?
She should be sitting in this seat.
No, we've had her here.
So our partnership with the Volunteer Center is absolutely essential because we simply could not afford to hire as many people as it takes to deliver the services that we provide. Our food bank has three staff members, they have 20,000 people who walk through. So if it wasn't for volunteers who come in and stock our shelves.
Just that food bank on Red Branch Road gets 20,000 people?
20,000 people.
It's a little place, too.
It's a little place. Actually, 22,000, to be exact.
Wow. But it works.
Yeah, it works.
So if someone wants to adopt a family, what does that look like? What does that feel like? Do you actually get a list and then go shopping for the family, and then do you get to deliver it? Or what does that look like?
Well, we can customize it so it will look however the family wants it to look. But basically, we will provide them with sizes of the children, the age of the children. Children have a wish list. So we just let them have that information. And if they want to keep it anonymous, we will deliver on their behalf. If they want to deliver, then we talk with our families, make sure we have their permission to do so, and then they can deliver to their homes. So it works both ways.
So if people out there want to give their kids a good lesson in what Christmas is really about, what giving is really about, they just go, then contact your office.
Absolutely.
And
Thank you so much.
And you'll help to design a program for them.
Absolutely.
Where can they do that? What's the website?
They can call us on 410-313-6440 or go to our website, which is cac-hc.org.
Excellent.
cac-hc.org. Okay, great. Before we wrap up, I did want to, I meant to bring this up earlier, but when we were working together about 3 years ago, the Green Revolution in Iran was going on. And,
exactly.
And you're Iranian.
I am.
Second generation? First generation?
First generation.
First generation.
Absolutely.
So you still have family.
Absolutely.
In Iran. That was a tough time.
It was a very difficult time. When I came to the United States 30 years ago.
Wow.
I came, my parents
sent
me
here.
Came
here when you were 5 years old?
Exactly. Thank you. That's why I love you. I came with the intention of going for a couple of years, thinking that all will calm down and revolution will be over. And here we are all these years ago, and we see the suffering continue. And it's difficult to be in this beautiful country and then watch the... inequality and suffering go
on. Have you gone back at all?
No, I haven't.
In 30 years, you haven't gone back?
I haven't.
That has to hurt a little bit.
It hurts a lot.
Yeah, I bet. Is there a big Iranian expat community in Howard County?
There is a good community, yes, absolutely, and we're very well connected.
And stay on top of all the news now, I guess.
We do.
It's got to be difficult, too, because Iran has kind of become the new boogeyman for America. I mean, you know,
And there is really a misperception about Iranians versus the regime and the government of Iran. And I think a lot of times Iranians bear the brunt of that reaction. But many of the Iranians who have come to exile and are living abroad have come because they don't believe in what is happening in Iran, and right. they don't believe in the principles of that regime. So hopefully everybody will keep that in mind as well.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing that perspective.
The vocal minority creates the perception.
Absolutely.
It does. Thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I hope we did okay, because, you know, like I said, I'm feeling a little out of my game today because of Paul's party last night.
You were fabulous.
Tommy did great.
And as
Mickey,
always.
And Mickey, thank you for coming back.
Yeah, so thank you for coming back, Mickey, and being our audience today.
Thank you so much.
That about wraps up yet another episode, but then there's that. Together with my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on December 14th with special guest Nikki Highsmith-Vernick, the president and CEO of the Horizon Foundation, along with our usual blend of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you'll join us.